outside of the Bible, the greatest two documents that have ever been penned are the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence. And the reason those two documents have lasted for 230 years is because they were written on the knees of the framers.
This is the voice of the Colorado Liberty Movement.
I'm not a sixth grader. It's fine you want to lecture me on the Constitution. I study the Constitution myself. I am reasonably well educated.
Live from Studio 56, this is Grassroots Radio Colorado.
Let's be clear about one thing. We're not here to rebrand a party. We're not here to put a fresh coat of rhetorical paint on our party. We're not here to abandon our principles in a contest of government giveaways. We're here to rebuild a country.
Now, Chris Cook with Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560.
Freedom, liberty, truth.
American woman, I said get away. American woman, listen what I say.
Welcome to Grassroots Radio Colorado on this gray, foggy, cold, November-y day. Oh, wait, it's May. It's May 20th. I cannot believe what this weather has been doing. So we are in hour six of the Stand With Rand filibuster. Senator Rand Paul is on the Senate floor filibustering. Whether it's a technical filibuster or not is up for debate, and who cares? But he is speaking in his sixth hour to try to stop the Patriot Act, and which is due to sunset here on June 1st. And the big, obviously, the big objection to the Patriot Act is Section 215 that allows bulk data collection on all of your communications data. All of your communications metadata, your phone calls, your texts, all of that stored in a gigantic facility over in Utah. And this is what we're trying to put a stop to. Now, obviously, the Second Circuit Court of Appeals did rule against that data collection, said that it was unconstitutional, but did not put an injunction in place. And McConnell, our esteemed president of the Senate, is really pushing to get the Patriot Act reauthorized. This is what he wants. He really believes that we cannot be safe unless we give up our freedoms. And Senator Paul disagrees vehemently enough that he's still speaking 6 hours into it. So representative from his state, Representative Tom Massey, posted on Senator Paul's Facebook page a most interesting man in the world meme. It says, "I don't always take over C-SPAN 2, but when I do, people actually watch C-SPAN 2. That just made me giggle. I thought that was great. So what is Rand Paul doing? Why is he filibustering? And what is it that he's hoping to accomplish with this? Is this a campaign stunt, do you think? Is this something that, you know, of course, he's declared for president. Is this a campaign stunt? Is this going to do any good to actually stop the Patriot Act? That's a good question. Now, there's an alternative that is working its way through Congress, the USA Freedom Act, which is, it has some of the same types of ideas in the Patriot Act, but it does not have this bulk data collection. It does not have, in fact, it has limits on what the NSA can collect and how they can collect it. And they have to present probable cause, you know, like according to the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. You remember that little document? So it scales back what the government can do and what the NSA can do under the auspices of trying to give us the illusion that we are safe and secure and they are keeping us that way. And so the USA Freedom Act, it's passed the House. In fact, it passed the House with huge bipartisan support, 388 to 88. Okay, huge bipartisan support. Democrats, Republicans, this is one area where we are actually united in trying to preserve people's freedoms. It's kind of amazing. You've got, you know, Tea Party patriots joining with the ACLU, dogs and cats living together, mass chaos. I mean, it's strange sometimes when we end up on the same side of an issue, but we are on the same side of this issue a lot of Democrats, a lot of Republicans are together on this. The NSA should not be monitoring our calls. They should not have this kind of ability. They should not have this bulk data collection ability and the ability to extort it out of the telephone companies. Shouldn't, period. And so Mitch McConnell standing against that, Mitch McConnell is standing against the Fourth Amendment. He's standing against our constitutional rights. And this, what Senator Paul is doing, and I've got to do a disclaimer here because I have not always been a huge Rand Paul fan. Okay, I don't know why, you know, for whatever reason, and I'm sure a lot of you are, and that's great, that's fine. I mean, he is definitely conservative. He definitely has a lot of you know, very libertarian leanings, and that syncs very well with who I am. And I wouldn't be unhappy with him as president by any stretch of the imagination. But he just doesn't. I don't know. He doesn't sink for me. I'm not quite sure why. But what he is doing is representing us. And that is something that has been woefully lacking in Washington lately. He is actually being a backstop against executive overreach. What a concept. This is what our representatives are supposed to do. This is what our senators are supposed to do. They are supposed to be a counterbalancing branch of government, a co-equal branch of government with the judiciary and the executive branches. And under Mitch McConnell's leadership, the Senate has failed over and over and over and over again to do that. And that is what is so sorely disappointing when we look to leadership, but it's what is so inspiring when we see folks like Rand Paul, folks like Ted Cruz, folks like Mike Lee, who do actually represent us. They represent the preservation of our freedoms and our rights as they are guaranteed in the Constitution of the United States. What a concept. It just blows your mind, doesn't it? That's why I'm applauding him. This is why I am applauding what he's doing. It does not ultimately matter one single bit if you agree with why Rand Paul is filibustering right now. It does not matter one single bit. What I want you to do is to applaud what he is doing, because what he is doing is working to keep us free. And that is worth applauding. I want all of our senators, all of our representatives, all of our elected officials, period, to want to do the same thing, to have the same instinct, to be willing to stand until they cannot stand up anymore and go in front of, yes, the cameras on C-SPAN 2, or go in front of whatever elected body they are a part of, go in front of the American people on the media, and you know, on the television or through the media, and stand for what we believe in as Americans. One of those things that we believe in as Americans is our right, our natural right, to be secure in our persons. Without probable cause from the government, they cannot come in and violate that security. And that is what Rand Paul is standing up for. And I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud of that. And I'm really, really happy for that. But it this whole idea of Section 215 of the Patriot Act, this whole idea of bulk data collection, does bring up to the surface the key question: security or liberty? Which one is more important? And, you know, Benjamin Franklin, of course, there's that famous quote from Benjamin Franklin: they who can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty or safety. But I'd be curious to hear your thoughts. We're living in a different world than Benjamin Franklin was living in. So give me a call, 303-477-5600. I'm Chris Cook. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. You know, it's funny when the bump music is in stereo. And I have these headphones on because that's how you do this. And so I'm sitting here and there's only sound in one ear. And I kind of feel like I want to tilt over to the side. Anyway, I guess we need a webcam for that to really be effective. Anyway, this is Chris Cook. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560, talking about Rand Paul's filibuster against the Patriot Act, and he's still on the floor of the Senate. He's still talking. He's taken over C-SPAN 2, and people are actually watching C-SPAN 2 for once. Their audience has doubled to 10. Kind of like mine, right? I hope all you guys are coming over for the cocktail party later. I really do. So I want to talk about the security versus liberty idea. Because this is something in the 14 years since 9/11, we've watched our liberties decline. And we are probably the least free we have ever been in the history of this country right now. And it's just continuing to go downhill unless we start to change it. I mean, we have to. That's why we have the Liberty Lineup. That's why we have KLZ 560. That's why we have Tea Party groups. That's why we have a conservative movement. It's why we have, you know, folks who are activists and grassroots and out there doing things, because we have to stem this tide. We have to turn things around. And this is why is what we've seen happen over the course of the last 14 years. And yes, I readily admit the first 8 of those were under George Bush. And so, you know, we look at the idea that, okay, 9/11, we're attacked, and I never, ever want to minimize or marginalize what happened on that day. Everybody listening to the sound of my voice right now remembers exactly where they were when they heard about the first tower. Everybody knows exactly where they were during the course of all those events on that day. It was a horrible attack on America. The problem came in our response, in large part, because we did some of the right things. I mean, we started going after the roots of Al-Qaeda, and we started going after Osama bin Laden, and then did finally take him down. You know, we invaded Iraq to get Saddam Hussein out of power. I still believe that was the right thing to do. And I don't care what media comes at me when I decide that I'm going to run for president and we're going to, you know, try to trip me on that one. I think it was right for us to go into Iraq. So this is the thing. And you know, we're looking at that. Those are the right things to do. The wrong things to do, then, are to shut down the freedoms of the American people in order to safeguard us. Because when you do that, the terrorists have won, right? At that point, the terrorists have won. We need to make sure that we safeguard those freedoms, because that is exactly what they were attacking. If we take those down, if we subject our freedoms to scrutiny and decide that they are less important than our security, then what they have done is won. They have created a situation where we are less free. We are, in fact, in terror. And that is not appropriate. That is I should probably use a stronger word, but it's an inappropriate response to a terrorist attack. The appropriate response to a terrorist attack is say, you don't like us because we're Americans. You know what? We're going to become 1,000% more American in your face. I mean, that's exactly the appropriate response, to be much more embracing of freedom and to really put forth those American ideals that our founders started, you know, really take those ideas and manifest them in every aspect of our society. That would have been the appropriate response. That's not what we did. That's not what we did. Instead, we've taken these past 14 years to make Americans less and less and less free than we have ever been since the founding of this country. That has to turn around. That has to turn around. We've got to get back to the idea of balance in our government. We have to get back to the idea of the checks and balances, because the way that our freedoms are eroded is when those checks and balances decide to check out. You know, we've got three branches. We've got the judiciary, we've got Congress, and we've got the presidency, the executive branch. And what's happened over the course of the past 14 years is that the president has become more and more and more powerful, and Congress has abdicated its role, and the judiciary basically rubber stamps whatever it is that the White House wants. So at this point, that is why we have a dictator in Obama, is because of the situation we have allowed to happen. We've set this up so that this is the way that this happens. And when you have an all-powerful executive, individual freedom goes out the window. That is how our rights and our freedoms are taken away from us, is by not having those checks and balances in place. We have to get back to them. We have to get back to them. And I can't say that any more strongly. No one is above the law when you have a properly functioning constitutional government. No one is above the law. If the president is doing something illegal, Congress is going to pull him in. The judiciary is going to pull him in. If Congress passes unjust laws, the president can veto them, or they could be overruled by the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court does something that is contradictory to what we need as a society, then Congress can pass a new law, and the president can sign it. That's how all of this works. And once that breaks down, which it has over the past 14 years, then we have the situation where we are less and less and less free. We've got David from Denver on the line. David, welcome to Grassroots Radio. What do you got for us?
Yes, just on this topic, and just a quick, yesterday after I mentioned that the problem with going into Iraq was the result for the Christians, after I was off the line, you had commented that it was ISIS who had gone in and done it. If you look at it, the reason that I condemn what the American military did, or the leaders, is that while we had boots on the ground, while America was controlling Iraq, the population of the Christians decreased by some 2 million. ISIS is just the icing on the cake, so to speak.
Okay.
There was a lot of damage done because we went in there not understanding that with Islam you cannot have a multicultural, you know, kumbaya democracy.
Well, that may be. I still believe that it was the right decision to take down Saddam Hussein.
Well, what we should have done if we wanted to take out Saddam is kill him and then leave. We cannot build anything from a society that has already fallen to Islam. But when it comes to Rand Paul, what is crazy about it here is that we are sort of delusional if we think we're going to be able to retain our quote-unquote freedoms that we think we have and allow Islam to spread in America. You can't have both. If you want to retain your freedom of religion and your freedom of the speech and all the other freedoms that we take for granted, understand that you will lose those eventually as Islam spreads.
David, I understand what you're saying, but here's the thing. What you are talking about is a cultural issue, okay?
It's a religious issue.
No, I'm making the distinction between cultural versus government issue, okay? So this is not an issue. The spread of Islam is not an issue to be fought out at the government level using government force, except insofar as we are safeguarding the rights of Christian Americans, atheist Americans, you know, all other Americans who are not Islamic, okay?
Here's the thing, Chris. The only way that we will be able to retain the freedoms of America in the long run is to not allow Islam to spread here.
I disagree. I think that that is a recipe. That is an absolute recipe for giving up those things that are American in themselves.
No. Do you know when Islam began to spread in America?
1650 or so.
50 years or so.
Now they were here. I mean, the founders were dealing with them.
No, there were no Muslims in America. If there had been any Muslims in America at the time of the founding, they would have killed the founding fathers. In other words,
jihad has been a thing over the course of the past 50 years.
But it hasn't been within our borders. And if any country that has jihad within its borders eventually falls to Islam, there are no exceptions. Israel has a constant battle to retain their life because of all the Muslims there.
And I understand that, but I mean, Israel is founded, you know, basically as more or less as a theocracy. I mean, it is the Jewish state, okay? America is not the Christian state. And this is the thing that I think a lot of people get confused about. We have Judeo-Christian underpinnings. Absolutely, we do. But our country is founded on the idea of freedom. And if we shut down that freedom, if we sell out that freedom with the idea that if we just exclude this class of people, then we are going to be more free, I think that we have sacrificed the idea that is America at that point,
Chris,
on the altar of the security that you're advocating.
You have to use the examples of history and learn from them. Look at every single country that Islam has ever entered. India is the perfect example. They finally gave up and gave away half of their country to call it Pakistan to hopefully let the Muslims have their way.
Look at every other country on the face of the planet that is like America. Oh, wait a minute. There aren't any.
But we are the only country
the way that we are.
That's the delusion. People think that America will be the unicorn that's different from every other country in history.
We are. David, we are. We are like that. And I mean, do you disagree?
Will curse us for allowing Islam to get a foothold.
Okay. David, thank you so much for calling into Grassroots Radio. I really do appreciate it. We've got to run to break here for a second. Bruce, I do see you there. We'll get to you after the break. I do honestly believe in this idea called America. I want to make that very clear. And I think that that idea means that we jealously safeguard our freedoms, jealously safeguard our rights, but we do not abdicate those in the name of fear. We have to guard against that. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. This is Chris Cook. We've been talking about the Patriot Act and Senator Rand Paul's filibuster on the floor of the Senate. He's in his sixth hour. He's still going, and he's standing up for us. I mean, he's doing what our elected representatives ought to be doing, all of them, standing up for us. And that, to me, is something that is laudable, and I think we need to applaud him. And whether or not you agree with what he's, you know, why he's doing it, I think that this kind of conviction about our rights is something that needs to be cloned and repeated in every single representative that we've got. We've got Bruce from Westminster on the line. Bruce, thank you for being so patient. Welcome to Grassroots Radio. What do you got?
Hey, Chris, thank you very much. Glad to talk to you. Fun to talk to you.
Oh, thanks.
First of all, I say kudos to Rand Paul.
Good.
He's absolutely turd. Second question is, why aren't there 20 people up them to tag team and spell them on the filibuster?
That is a good question. And, I mean, there have been several who have stepped up.
Cory Gardner?
Oh, gosh. Really?
Well, at least there's Ted Cruz. Why isn't Ted Cruz jumping up?
Well, Mike Lee jumped up to help spell him. Let me see. Who else? There is, actually, if you go on to Breitbart.com, the top story is live updates on his filibuster. And so I've been trying to follow this. We've got Senator Chris Coons, who's a Democrat from Delaware, and John Tester, Democrat from Montana, went down to back him. Tom Cotton, Thomas Massey. Oh, no, he's just watching. He's a representative. We've got Steve Daines, Heidi Heitkamp, Martin Heinrich, all of these senators, and, of course, Mike Lee.
So, was the first to stand up. So why doesn't Mitch just pull the bill?
That's a good question. And there was a couple stories that I ran across as I was researching all this that made me think that a lot of this is kabuki. And
yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
That isn't that the bottom line, kabuki?
I wanted
to touch upon another thing, because if we could just call it kabuki, then that's cool, you know? I can always take entertainment.
Bruce says that's the end of the discussion. I guess that's the end of the discussion.
Yeah, see, because for me, there's a much darker side to this.
Okay, what's that?
Okay, it's that the government just doesn't collect information.
No, no.
The government uses the information to selectively enforce the law.
Absolutely.
Because we have a corrupt government.
Absolutely. Well, that's what I was talking about, those checks and balances. That's why we have to have them, is because it balances out that corruption.
You know, except that there's no one opposing the corruption, really, because it's so difficult to say that my own government's corrupt. That's so hard, and I think most of our colleagues can't say that because they know it's going to offend, they know it's going to hurt, and yet they also know it's true, but we have no idea how to fix it.
Right.
And let me give you an example that just is so burned into my mind.
Okay, quick example.
Okay. A while back in Denver, there was a couple guys who were beaten up by the Denver police.
Okay.
And it turned out that these Halo cameras Denver has...
Yeah.
Actually had it on tape, so his lawyer found they had it, and then he subpoenaed and blah, blah, blah. And what the videotape shows is it shows the camera was panned down to capture the action, and then when the operator of the camera saw that it was the police beating up this guy, the camera panned away.
Oh, geez.
Okay? And that was such a blatant example of the corruption right here in the Denver Police Department,
right,
that goes on, and this is repeated over and over again all over the country, is information is used to selectively enforce our laws.
Bruce, I'm going to have to stop you there. I do agree that, you know, we have just massive amounts of corruption all throughout our government, but you know, some of it is just human nature, and that's why we have structures in place and infrastructure in place to hopefully combat that. That is part of it. The other thing that I think that we do desperately need, and this has been something I've been waffling on for a long time, is term limits. If we can get people out of office and if we can cut back on the bureaucracy on top of it, then we will be able to limit that corruption. Bruce, thank you so much for calling into Grassroots Radio. I always enjoy it when you do call. We've got one line open, 303-477-5600. We've got Tim on the line. Tim, welcome to Grassroots Radio. What do you got for us?
Hi, Chris.
Hi.
I know everybody loves Rand Paul, but I got to tell you, he'd have a lot more credibility with me if he had not supported his buddy from Kentucky, Mitch McConnell.
Granted.
And so, it is kabuki. It's absolutely kabuki. And, you know, I'm not impressed. Yay.
Okay.
Let's go after NSA. Yay. It's not the result that's going to happen. It is grandstanding because he's running for president. I want these 12 idiots who are running for president to stand there and look at each other and tell me what is different about each of them and why I should vote for one of them, because I tell you what, I am wholly unimpressed.
Really? With every single one of them? There's no one that you like?
Not with every single one of them, but
okay.
It absolutely infuriates me that they keep coming out of the woodwork. This is history repeating itself. Go back to the 98 to 2000 cycle when we had, you know, the 12 dwarfs standing there as who's going to run against Alan, or who's going to run against George Bush.
Right.
And the real debate was when Tommy Thompson and W and two other guys got together and said, okay, which one of the four of us is it going to be? That's what's going on right now.
I believe that you're right. And that's, you know, Tim, I think part of the problem is that you've got a balance. There's a balance thing that has to go on here. We need the conservative grassroots to have a voice within that presidential field. And so we've got folks like Rand Paul who have stepped up, Ted Cruz, who's my guy. We've got these folks who have stepped up. And then you've got your establishment folks. You've got people who are coming in from the outside like Carly Fiorina and Ben Carson. And ultimately, what we're going to end up doing is splitting the vote. And so we need to not do that. We do need, I think, to rally at some point around a single candidate. But that being said, we have a year to figure out who that person is, maybe less, but we have a year to figure out who that person is. And I do think that it will happen. I think that it will happen. I don't want it to be a backdoor thing, but to some degree, because of the way that our elections are structured, I think that there's going to be some wheeling and dealing that goes on. Okay, you step out, I'll make you my vice president, you know, my running mate, you know, that kind of thing. Some of that is going to happen. What I don't want to see is Jeb Bush. And what I don't want to see is Chris Christie. What I want to make sure that we have is a viable, principled, constitutional conservative running for president. That's what I want to see. And to be frank with you, I don't care how we get there. As long as that is the end result, I'm happy. I want a constitutional conservative, principled man or woman, a statesman. That's what I'm looking for. So, Tim, thank you so much for calling into Grassroots Radio. This is the thing I think, and Tim brought up another point that I want to address. Yes, I do think to some degree that this may be kabuki, meaning that it's just all political drama. And that may be what they're doing. McConnell and Paul, maybe they've got some sort of deal that, you know, Paul supported him for his position, and McConnell is supporting Paul to do this because it's, you know, it fits in with his campaign. That could be what's happening. I think on the larger scale, I guess what I'm trying to say is I want all of our elected representatives to stand like this. I want all of them to be willing to stand like this for whatever reason. If they are going to speak out for our rights, then I think that is a positive thing. I do. And I guess maybe when you think about it, the only thing that really matters in the end is not what the motivations were, but what the results were. That is what ultimately is the thing that matters the most. And that's the piece that we have to look at. And so if just think what would happen if we had 100 senators sitting in the Senate chamber, all of whom were willing to defend our constitutional rights. Just dream with me for a minute on that. That's why I applaud what Senator Paul is doing, is because this is behavior with an effect. For whatever motivations, even if it is kabuki theater, this is behavior with an effect that I want to see demonstrated over and over and over again. Not that I want to filibuster on everything, but what I do want is a principled, vocal, public stand for our rights, with the opportunity to speak out for our rights, and the eloquence and the articulation of why we have these freedoms and why they're worth defending, and the understanding of that. Now, you can't speak on the floor of the Senate for 6 hours about our right to privacy unless you have some grounding in that right, unless you have some understanding of where it came from, what our natural rights are, why the Fourth Amendment exists, why we need to safeguard it so jealously, and what is happening currently to make it important to speak out about that right now. So, you know, this is actually a subject I'm going to be covering tomorrow evening with Professor Rob Nadelson. And he's going to talk about the Second Amendment or the Second Circuit Court of Appeals decision on the NSA. So you're going to want to listen to that because it's you know, the constitutional implications of what they're trying to do with Section 215 and the constitutional implications of what the Second Circuit Court of Appeals did, whether or not they actually reached those constitutional issues in their decision or not, I think are absolutely fascinating. And it's really important that we understand this, that we do have this right to privacy, and that we do have, thank goodness, a few representatives who are willing to stand for those. That's really more the message that I want to get across. I'm Chris Cook. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. Before I go on to this next segment, I want to kind of change gears here real quick. Bruce in Westminster I have another listener who texted me during your call who wants to know if you're single. So this is the Grassroots Radio Colorado dating service, and if you want to call and let us know, then we'll see what we can do. So, these ideas, they do resonate with people, and I'm so glad and pleased. I mean, we are the smartest radio destination in Denver. You know that, right? This is where you get the deep stuff. This is where you get the analysis. This is where you get all the stuff that actually makes sense. And, it's a little intoxicating, and it's sort of romantic at times, I suppose. So there you go. I have been running across articles concerning this Waco shooting, which I haven't really talked about since it happened. And, of course, it was tragic, and 9 people are dead. But there are civil rights activists and community organizers who are out there complaining because the gangbangers down in Waco are not being treated in the media the same way that the rioters in Baltimore were treated. This really had me scratching my head. This really, to me, they're two completely, this is apples and oranges. They're two completely separate incidents. And how you could take this opportunity and take this incident to complain that the Waco gang members are not being treated in the media the same way that the rioters were. And what they're talking about is that in Baltimore, we saw rioters, and then they start making these comments like, you have not heard the level of disgust and dismay as you did over fires burning in Ferguson and in Baltimore. And these ideas that people were being stereotyped in the riots in Baltimore, but not the gangbangers down in Waco. Does this make any sense to anyone? The thing that bothers me about this idea is that they are these critics, these civil rights activists, these people who complain about racial stuff all the time, because that's what they do. It's how they make their living. They have such a collectivist mentality that they don't understand when their collectivism is met with collective judgment. And they just don't get this. They're complaining that this blanket, these blanket insults, I guess is probably the best way to put it, were put out against all the rioters in Baltimore and Ferguson because of what they were doing. But they're not seeing the same thing happening in Waco because those folks were white. And of course, they're not all white. There's Latinos in there. There's all sorts of different colors within those gang affiliations, according to the pictures. The thing is, and the thing that bothers me about all this is this collectivist idea. And I want to unpack this a little bit. We get back to American ideals. Part of that American ideal is individualism. It is who we each are as individuals. It's our individual rights. It's that individualism, that mentality, not this socialist huddling mass collectivism. I mean, think about the Statue of Liberty and what the plaque says. Give us your huddling masses yearning to breathe free. In other words, you want to go from this overpacked collective beehive mentality to a place where each of you can flourish as individuals. That is what America is all about. And it seems to me in these comments that these leftist liberal morons continue to put forward, they want us to become huddled masses. They want to put us all back into that beehive mentality, and they continue to do this. The thing that really bothers me about this and the article in particular that I'm talking about, there was an article that was written by, let me get you his name, Jesse Holland. He writes for the Associated Press, and the title of the article is Differing Perceptions of Waco and Baltimore Bothering Some. Okay, so he goes through this entire article talking about how the Baltimore rioters and the Ferguson rioters were collectively condemned, and the Waco gangbangers are not being collectively condemned. I mean, they're violent thugs. There's no doubt about that. That's who they are. It's a motorcycle gang. But they complain that because the rioters were black, they're being treated differently. And then he fails in this article, utterly fails to ever realize the irony of the fact that the rioters themselves were putting forth a collectivist message. They were saying, judge us all as blacks because, you know, because of our skin color, judge us as better than you. I mean, that was the message in the riots. Make us special, treat us differently because of our skin color. That's what we want you to do. And then they're surprised when they are treated differently because of their skin color. The mental gymnastics that this guy has to go through to condemn the fact that people entered into the same conversation that they started. The left started this. The left put out this message that said, that's what the rioters were doing, is putting out this message, treat us differently. Now, what's the message in Waco? What's the message of a gangbang, you know, rumble? I mean, the message is leave us alone. The message is don't run over my foot with your vehicle or I'm going to kill you. I mean, that's the message. There's no underlying social message here. There's no bigger narrative. There's nothing like that. There is in the riots. And that is what the purpose of the riots was to put out this, if you do not treat us all as more special, if you do not find a way to I mean, and of course their narrative sounds a little different than that. It's you know, we have systemic racism, and so you need to figure out a way to eradicate that. That's how they put it. But bottom line is treat us special. And then they're surprised when they're actually engaged on that level. So you do not get to be treated special. You don't get that opportunity. If instead the rioters in Baltimore and the rioters in Ferguson had allowed the individuals involved in those incidents to be judged as individuals, then we would not see this perceived disparity in media treatment. That would not happen because the conversation would not have been started. If the rioters had stayed home, if the rioters instead had said, you know what, those police officers need to be punished if they did something wrong, then they would not have this blanket condemnation. But they started the collectivist conversation, and then they're surprised when somebody else joins the conversation. I said it last night. Liberals are always telling you how much they're willing to engage other differing points of view right up until somebody else actually expresses one of those points of view. Then they're just totally put out because they didn't know that other points of view actually existed, did not have a clue. It's kind of surprising. So I wanted to cover that. This article just really, really made me angry. And I just want to point out that hypocrisy and that collectivism. That's really what it comes down to. You know, a culture doesn't commit a crime. People commit crimes. People should be judged for those crimes as individuals. That's what that is about. Now, there are markers. I will give you that. We talk about Islam and radical Islam on this show a lot. And that is something that I think it makes sense when we're talking about security measures to do some profiling, to do some of that stuff, because that, I mean, we've got statistical propensities, but we are not judging everyone in that culture. We are not judging everyone. Now, I will pass judgment on Islam all day long. I think the religion, it's not a religion, it's a neopolitical ideology. I'll pass judgment on that all day long because that is what is driving a lot of this stuff. But the individual people, I'm willing to engage as individuals. And if we can get back to that individualism, back to that underlying ideal that makes up what we are as Americans. I mean, think about that. Think about the prototypical Western cowboy out there on the plains, riding his horse. I mean, that's a rugged individual. That is an American. Let's get back to that ideal. and continued to go there instead of trying to all become huddled masses. I'm Chris Cook. Up next, we've got Jess Loban. He is a candidate for State Senate District 4, and we'll be talking with him. You're listening to Chris Cook on Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560.